5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running.
There is no other institution that has the ability, uniquely.
Without a heritage, every generation starts over.
Ask not.
To remind the current regime.
What your country.
We the people tell the government what it is allowed to do.
To get back in their box and stay there.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
From the Heritage Foundation, this is Heritage Explains.
In 1954, the United States Supreme Court decided the landmark case Brown versus Board of Education. It ruled unanimously that segregating public schools on a racial basis was unconstitutional. In 1966, the Supreme Court made a unanimous decision in Miranda versus Arizona that law enforcement must inform detained suspects of their rights, including their right to remain silent and the right to an attorney. In 1974, in the United States versus Nixon, the Supreme Court was likewise unanimous in holding that then-President Richard Nixon had to surrender the infamous Watergate tapes. Unanimous decisions by the highest court in the land are not altogether rare. Most years, the Supreme Court sees a 9-0 split on a decision more than any other. In fact, the Federalist Society reports that in the 2022 term, 48% of the decisions handed down were unanimous. Although we may often be less aware of these cases since they tend to generate less publicity. But this past Monday, March 4th, a unanimous decision passed down by the court has received a lot of attention. This is Trump versus Anderson, a case in which the state of Colorado attempted to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. The court ruled against the state. Here to talk about this decision and why it matters is Heritage Senior Legal Fellow Hans von Spakovsky. Hans von Spakovsky, welcome to Heritage Explains.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Can you tell us what it is that you do here at the Heritage Foundation?
I'm in the legal department, but I'm the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative. And I've been working on elections for a long time. And, you know, I really got into this because I'm first generation. My parents are immigrants. My mother grew up in Nazi Germany. My father was Russian, experienced dictatorship. And I learned from an early age the most valuable right Americans have is the right to vote and pick who is going to represent us in the government. And that really got me into this area.
Well, fantastic. And we're glad that you are in this area, especially this week has been an eventful one.
It has.
And so can you tell us a little bit about what happened at the Supreme Court on Monday?
Challengers in various states have gone to court or filed actions with the chief election official, usually the Secretary of State, saying that Donald Trump should not be on the ballot for the presidential primary because he is disqualified under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And what they were talking about was, remember, the 14th Amendment was one of the three Reconstruction Amendments passed after the American Civil War. And Congress put in a provision, Section 3, basically that was intended to prevent senior Confederate military officers and Confederate government officials from serving in the federal government and actual state government too. So they said, well, because he was involved in an insurrection, then Donald Trump is disqualified because he fits within the language of Section 3, and that's what Section 3 does. Colorado had said he can't be on the ballot. Secretary of State in Maine said he couldn't be on the ballot. And just a week or so ago, a county judge in Cook County said he couldn't be on the ballot. That ended up before the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court on Monday, 9-0, said that provision of the 14th Amendment, only Congress has the power to enforce it, not state officials. And they made that ruling based on both the plain text of the 14th Amendment, which says that it's Congress that has the authority to pass legislation to enforce the 14th Amendment, and its history. And what the Supreme Court said was, look, states are sovereign governments, and they've got control over the qualifications of people running for state office. But they can't disqualify federal officials, whether they're running for president or running for Congress. And this was a straight-out, plain interpretation of the Constitution. But, Mark, it was also very clear that all of the justices were concerned about the chaos that would occur. In fact, that's the word they used. The chaos that would occur if state officials had this power. Because imagine a national election in which some states say Donald Trump, well, yeah, he can be on the ballot in this state. But other states say, oh, no, he can't be on the ballot in this state. And even worse, the court pointed out that if state officials had this power to disqualify people because they supposedly can't serve in office, they wouldn't have to do it before people cast their votes. They could do it afterwards. So up until inauguration, some state could say, oh, yeah, well, yeah, Donald Trump, yeah, he did win our state. Most people voted for him, but he's disqualified. And therefore, his votes don't count because he violated Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And the Supreme Court said you just can't have that kind of potential of election chaos.
Obviously, this was a unanimous decision from the Supreme Court.
It was.
Is that a rare outcome, and was it unexpected in this case?
You know, it's not as rare an outcome as people seem to think. You know, there are plenty of unanimous decisions by the court, often on matters that aren't quite controversial. It seems like on social issues that they really split. But on a lot of other issues, you fairly often get unanimous votes. This was not unexpected. And it was not unexpected, one, because I actually think the constitutional text is very clear on this. But boy, anybody who listened to the oral arguments would have realized that even the liberal justices, boy, they were asking very tough questions of of Colorado. And they clearly, from the oral questions, did not think this would be a good idea or that it was a proper interpretation of the Constitution. So I got to tell you, I was expecting, if not a 9-0 decision, probably at least 8-1. But look, even the newest member of the court, right, Justice Brown Jackson, she's probably the most liberal member of the court, and even she was sounding like a conservative when she was asking questions of the advocates at the oral argument.
How have officials from the state of Colorado and other states who were proposing these measures, how have they responded? Do they have any recourse? Is the conversation over at this point?
No, the conversation is over. I saw that the Secretary of State of Colorado said, oh, this was wrongly decided by the Supreme Court. Well, sorry, when all nine justices say the state is wrong, I don't think she has much of a leg to stand on. Now, only Colorado was a party to the case, but this decision was broad enough saying that no state official has the ability to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, that this also throws out what the Maine Secretary of State did. It throws out what that county judge did. And the other important thing about this is look, there were a couple of courts, Minnesota, the state Supreme Court, for example, who, yeah, they tossed out the challenge to Trump being on the ballot, but only for the primary. And the reason they gave was they said, oh, well, this is a political party. They can have whatever rules they want, and they can pick whoever they want. We will reserve whether or not we can disqualify whoever the Republican nominee is from the general election ballot in November. That isn't going to happen now because this decision applies whether it's the primary or the general election if Trump becomes the nominee of the Republican Party. And remember, it's not just Trump. This applies to anyone else running for a federal office, even members of Congress. And I think people have forgotten this is the second try at this. 2 years ago in 2022, these same organizations filed challenges in various states, North Carolina, Georgia, Wisconsin, against Republican incumbents of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate who were running for re-election, saying they should be disqualified because they participated in an insurrection on January 6th. And all of those cases were defeated.
If these legislators knew that it was very unlikely that their case was going to be viewed favorably by the Supreme Court, why would they bring these suits forward?
Well, they had a lot of very wrong experts on their side. I mean, they had all these academics saying, "Oh, no, you can enforce this against Donald Trump," and they were all wrong. I mean, the first thing I wanted to say to folks was, "Well, I told you so," because to me it was pretty clear that you can't do this. But also, I think they wanted to cause as much pain and cost Donald Trump's candidacy a lot of money fighting these. So from their point of view, yeah, they may have lost ultimately before the Supreme Court, but I think there was a huge money and big donors behind this effort so that they could get rid of this particular presidential candidate without having to face him in an election.
On Monday of this past week, you and our own Collie Stimson co-penned a commentary in the Daily Signal entitled, "With Trump Ruling, Supreme Court Restores Voting Rights of Millions of Americans."
Yeah.
And your takeaway from this is not only was this a favorable outcome for one political candidate and potentially others, but it's also a favorable turnout for the American voting populace. Why is that?
Yeah, because, look, the bottom line of this decision was that you had four state court judges in Colorado saying that the people of Colorado, the registered voters, they don't get to decide who their candidate should be for president. That's 4.5 million registered voters. In Maine, you had one state official, the Secretary of State, saying, "Oh, the 1 million registered voters in Maine, you don't get to decide." And in Chicago, we had a county court doing it. Illinois's got over 8 million registered voters. So in essence, what is that, six state officials were disenfranchising 14 million registered voters. So now all these voters have had their right restored, and they get the ability to decide who they want to be a candidate. This is a great example of how the Constitution is supposed to work when it's properly interpreted and properly applied. And people should be happy about that. It doesn't matter whether you like or don't like Donald Trump. The issue is that state officials shouldn't be able to interfere with a national election in this way, because folks, for example, who don't like Donald Trump should realize that if the Supreme Court had gone the other way, there would have been nothing to stop a state official in another state from saying, "Oh, Joe Biden, well, he's guilty. We think he's guilty of treason because he's opened up the border and allowed millions of illegal aliens to come across, and therefore we're not going to put him on the ballot." That would have been within the authority of state officials if this case had gone the other way.
Hans von Spakovsky, thank you for being with us on Heritage Explains.
Sir, thanks for having me.
Thank you to Hans von Spakovsky for his contribution to today's episode. You can find more from Hans by going to heritage.org or by following him on X at @hvonspakovsky. There will be links in the show notes to Hans's piece on this topic in the Daily Signal, as well as to the piece by the Federalist Society referenced in today's introduction. And thank you, as always, to you for listening to Heritage Explains. If you have any thoughts, feedback, or unanimous decisions for us, we look forward to hearing from you. You can reach out to us at heritageexplains@heritage.org. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Heritage Explains is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation. It's written and produced by Mark Ghani, Lauren Evans, and John Popp.